original certified farmer's market. In the KSRO kitchen, no, we're no longer in the greenhouse. We've gone across town to meet up with Chef John Ash, who has been in the KSRO kitchen continuously every Saturday morning from 11 until noon since 1987. And this Saturday is no exception. If you go to the KSRO website, you can catch many of the shows, at least going back to 2016. They're all archived. They're all podcasted. So wherever you take us, you can always catch a show. You can also check out some of the recent recipes that John has posted. We do have the wonderful seaweed recipes that we discussed on last week's show. And that was a lot of fun, devoting the show to seaweed. The seaweed and tofu beignet. I haven't had a chance to try those yet, but it's on my to-do list. That's up on the website. The nori sesame butter, that's on the website. And the makame cucumber salad, which I have tried and which is really easy and really delicious.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
So thank you for those recipes. Oh, yeah. So you can find those on the website. A little bit later in the show, we have not forgotten that next week is July 4th. And many of you, this is the biggest single barbecue day, grilling day of the year. And the second half hour of the show, we'll welcome Chef Jamie Proviance to the program. His latest book is Weber's Ultimate Grilling, a step-by-step guide to barbecue genius. It was almost a year to the day, John, that Jamie sat in the KSRO kitchen with us to talk about this book, which still has few equals as far as 750 color photos in it. It's quite a remarkable book. And we're going to give away an autographed copy of this book before the show is over at noon.
Fantastic.
First part of the show, we're going to devote to sustainable seafood. You wrote a wonderful article that appeared in our local Press Democrat about sustainable seafoods and why it's an important topic, how we can easily identify what seafoods are produced and sustainably, and why it's so important that we look for sustainable seafoods. This is a buzzword for me.
Yeah.
When I hear the word, you've got to buy sustainable seafood, I really don't know, truthfully, what that means. I think it kind of means renewable. I always think of the word renewable. Is it going to be here for the long term? What can I...
You got it. That's the definition. It's that you're not going to wipe it out, that you're... children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren will also have the opportunity.
So that's an easy way for people to think about that.
Because there are other issues, and I started that article off, there are other issues around seafood in general. One is the whole concern about mercury. Some of the fishes, especially the top feeders like tuna and swordfish and all of that stuff, have issues with absorbing a lot of mercury in their flesh. And one of the other concerns, of course, is habitat destruction because of the way we fish. You know, actually in America we do it. We have some great rules and laws about not taking and grinding up the bottom of the ocean and all this stuff. It's not true in other parts of the world. But the sustainable part of it is get fish that are not in danger of disappearing. And some of those, you know, I mean, we're aware of them, but bluefin tuna is one of those that, of course, if you're a sushi eater, you know, that's the most popular fish for sushi. Well, chances are it's not going to be here in a decade or so. It's so endangered because it's been so badly overfished that and they grow slowly. So when you take them, they don't have a chance to mature and do all of that. So that's a big part of that sustainable thing. And the other thing that I included in the article were resources. If you're interested in, so how do I know what's sustainable? There's some really wonderful ones. One that I've worked with for a long time is Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch, which is very good at describing those fish and shellfish that are sustainable. And it's also important to remember that farmed fish, the majority of the fish that we eat now, that all of us eat, come from farms, come from aquaculture, not from the wild. And part of that is the understanding that the oceans have, they're tapped out. They can't give us any more. There are more of us all the time, and the same number or fewer fish and shellfish. And that farming, aquaculture, can be okay. There are some, all of the shellfish that we eat, for example, mussels and clams and oysters, all of those are farmed. Actually, don't want to collect them in the wild because of the concerns about red tides and stuff like that.
So those are pretty much automatic good bets, safe bets,
yeah,
to consume those.
Yeah.
Those,
yeah,
shellfish.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also finned fish that are both, because a lot of them are farmed. You know, there was a real scare thing that happened a few years ago with salmon, as an example. Mm-hmm. Don't eat farm salmon. I remember Marion Burroughs of the New York Times wrote a really scathing piece on farm salmon and how they are grown and what they're fed and the heavy use of antibiotics and things like that. And it scared a lot of people off from that, who sort of said, well, I'm not going to eat those farm salmon. There were farmers of salmon who said, well, that's not a good thing. Can't we grow these fish, salmon, and certainly other fish that are grown with aquaculture, like tilapia and catfish and stuff like that, fishes like those. Can't we grow them more sustainably? Can't we grow them so that they're not, there aren't so many problems with them? And they have. And even the Monterey Bay Aquarium, who for years said, avoid farm salmon and some of these other fish at all costs. Don't buy them. Don't encourage them. Now have on their, they have the green, yellow, red kind of thing, but have on the green and the yellow, which are fishes and shellfishes that you can eat, have some that are listed, that are farmed, but they're done in a wholesome and in a way that makes them not so much of a problem.
Yeah.
So.
Well, on June 26th, what was that, yesterday? It was June 26th. Today, 27th?
Today's the 27th.
Yesterday was National Catfish Day.
Yeah, was it?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
We celebrated that last year.
Yeah.
And, of course, I put things on my calendar.
Yeah.
So I made catfish yesterday. And I feel perfectly good. And I love catfish. It's one of my most favorite fish. Buying that, because I know that's usually done well, farm-raised catfish.
Yeah.
So that's one of my first ones that I always go to. Salmon, I never quite know. I think it's the most complicated of any of the fish about knowing which one. You don't want to do the Atlantic one. Well, wait, there's that. And then when is it in season, when it's not in season? What about with frozen versus fresh? I think there's more confusion over salmon about what the best choices
are. In part
are.
Because it's a very popular fish. And one of the things that you just mentioned, frozen versus fresh. Well, it turns out that frozen is probably better, probably fresher, in quotes, than fresh salmon is, because it takes a while to get the salmon here if it's caught up in Alaska or something. So a lot of these salmon boats, they go out, they catch the fish, and within an hour or two, the fish are filleted and frozen, and they're really beautiful. And I've done it several times with people. Take a piece of frozen salmon, piece of fresh salmon, cook them as much as you can, exactly the same, and then without identifying which is which, have people taste them and say, what do you think is better? And almost invariably, the frozen one is better.
Well, it's too bad that most diners, if they ask the waiter, is this fresh salmon? No, it's frozen. They're not going to order
Isn't
that true?
Yeah. And even in the supermarkets now, you're seeing more and more of their filleted, they're portioned, they're packed in cryovac bags. I mean, the big supermarkets carry a lot of those stuff. Those are just great. They're better than any thing that you might buy in that same market that is still fresh, because it's probably several days out of the water. So it's begun to deteriorate a bit.
And you've worked with frozen salmon from other countries that you think are doing a sensational job, like Norway and places.
Yeah,
like that.
Well, that wasn't the case in the beginning. I'll tell this story very briefly. I got hooked on early on in my restaurant years. The Norwegians, they were the first to really figure out how to grow salmon in pens out in the cold, icy fjords and all of that stuff. And so I had this picture in my mind, in part because they put it there, of, oh, these salmon, they're grown in this icy water and shipped to us immediately and all of that stuff, until I had a chance to go to Norway and observe what was going on there. And what they were doing, among other things, was using a lot of antibiotics, because if in those pens, if you put too many fish in there, if one gets sick, they're all going to get sick. Also, they were feeding them feed that was fish meal, so they were destroying other fishes in order to be able to feed the salmon, which didn't make a lot of sense. And so it took a long time. There are some producers in Norway now who are doing a good job with this. And you can go, again, Seafood Watch is a great resource. You can download it if you want to, have it on your smartphone, or get the little cards. I think it's great to have it on your smartphone, because that information changes from time to time, and this way you can be assured of always having the most up-to-date information. And, you know, use that as a guide. And they list producers and list places in the world that you can do this. It's just a great resource.
Okay.
So it doesn't have to be confusing.
Good. You point out that I never really thought of this too much, except for things like California halibut, which is seasonal. Mm-hmm. Sardines, a seasonal smelt. There are seasonal, but usually when we're at the seafood counter, I don't think about what's in season, because I'm just, there's this display case of all these fish, and I kind of think of like, what am I in the mood for, and how am I going to cook the fish, and what would be the best choice? You, of course, as a professional, you're thinking differently than the average consumer when we go to the fish market.
Yeah, but I hear your pain. And one of the concerns is, I mean, even as a restaurateur, there were only three fish that people would buy with any regularity. They would buy salmon, they would buy halibut, and tuna were the three. And anything else, if you brought it in, even though it was perfectly wonderful, caught in the wild or ethically farm-raised and all that stuff, oh, it was too weird. You know, for us on the West Coast, I mean, you just mentioned catfish. People on the West Coast just don't eat catfish. No. It's crazy, because in the Midwest and the South, catfish is probably the most popular fish.
I know. It was really funny. Years ago, you shared the story on the show about when you were one of the guest chefs down at the Monterey Bay Seafood Aquarium's big extravaganza, where chefs from all over the world are flowing in, and you randomly are assigned a particular fish to work with. You were assigned catfish. And a chef or two told you, oh, sorry about that, John, tough luck. They felt badly for you that you had to work with catfish, and you were thrilled.
Because as you said, it's really delicious. It's mild and it's tasty, and it lends itself to all kinds of preparations and all of that stuff.
But it doesn't have marquee star quality.
No, it's you know, kind of the salmon guys have been, they've been great at featuring things like Copper River salmon, you know, the first of the season.
You're right.
Well, you know, all the salmon from Alaska is pretty good.
You're right. But they've not done a good job marketing catfish out here, too. We're going to get into a few of the recipes in just a couple of minutes that you posted on the Press Democrat. So should seafood be labeled with one of these certification?
Yes.
They should.
Yes. And the place that you buy it should be somebody who subscribes to either Seafood Watch or MSC or some of these things that sort of say, you know, we're buying responsibly. We're using these people to provide the science to identify which of these fishes and shellfishes are you know, again, ethically either caught or raised without the use of antibiotics and things like that. So that's your resources. Just familiarize yourself with some of these.
Okay,
and that it's a great way to do. Don't buy fish that you that don't have some sort of background to it. It's just a way of doing it. You know, one of the things, I'm always charmed to go to Chinatown in San Francisco. I lived there for a long time. And the place is loaded with fish, and a lot of it live and flopping around and all that stuff. And you ask these guys, well, is this, you know, do you have MSC or Seafood Watch or one of these certifications on it? They just look at you blankly. They don't know.
Would you buy it?
No.
You wouldn't.
No.
You just go somewhere else,
yeah.
Look somewhere else. Some of the fish, when you've talked on the show about some of your favorite, are black cod,
yes.
Which is butterfish, yeah. Or sable
fish. Fish, no, yeah, those are the other
and
names.
And do we ever see that in the
seafood
market?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we catch, it's caught, it's actually caught in California waters and a little further north.
Is it seasonal?
Or
is it available?
Well, you can kind of get it all year long. It does have a season. The difficulty with it is, it's my favorite fish of all, black cod. The problem with it is that they don't swim in big schools, so it's not like you can put a seine out there and catch a whole bunch of them at one time. They also swim very deep in the ocean, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 feet. So that's a lot of, if you're fishing with a pole, it's a lot of line to let out, you know, and then to crank them back in. So for that reason, you can get them. And the way that I find to, if you black cod, which is my favorite, as I mentioned, is to buy them frozen. Buy those that have been caught and filleted and packaged right on the boat and flash frozen, and you can get those all year round.
You can,
yeah.
And they, as you mentioned, are just as in.
They're better.
They're better than fresh.
Than the fresh.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
And another fish I know that you've talked about on the show over the years is Arctic char.
Which is in the salmonoid family, you know, which includes salmon and trout and all of that. So it looks very much like salmon when you get it. The flesh is a pretty light pink color, and it has kind of a good salmon flavor. And it's a farmed fish that in most of what we get in the market is not even farmed in the ocean, but is farmed in big holding tanks on land, like up in British Columbia and places like that. And it's very sustainable. It's raised well, and it's, again, doesn't suffer from lots of manipulation from chemistry and things like that.
That's encouraging to know.
Yeah.
The recipes we'll talk about and feature crab and shrimp and mussels and rockfish. We'll find out what that is. Mm-hmm. Oysters and scallops and clams. That'll cover a lot of the world of seafood,
yeah,
when we come
all
back.
All yummy.
Chef John Ash is in the KSRO kitchen. As always this morning, I'm Steve Garner.
Petaluma hears FM News Talk KSRO on Crystal Clear FM at 94.5.
Come to the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, voted Best Farmers Market. You'll find Garden Starts, the best produce of the season from Singing Frogs, The Patch, Armstrong Valley, Ponce Farms, and Hector's Honey. The Beet Generation has a large selection of fresh-made pasta. Savor farm fresh eggs, jams, and jellies, fresh mushrooms, and fresh fruit, apricots, peaches, nectarines, strawberries, and cherries. Discover quality beef, pork, lamb, and duck, Anna's fresh seafood, and Franco's freshly made sausages. The best choices of food vendors, the Green Grocer's Farm Fresh Menu, Eli's Kitchen has returned to provide fabulous homemade Mexican food. Santa Rosa's Original Certified Farmers Market at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts is open year-round, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thank you, Sonoma County, for voting them number one, the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Hey, Sonoma County, thank you for making Creams Towing the number one rated heavy-duty towing company in Sonoma County. Creams Heavy Duty Towing has the largest fleet of medium and heavy duty rigs in Sonoma County and have been around since the 70s. So they're doing something right. Creams Heavy Duty Towing is on the road 24/7. Got a big rig stuck or need a four-wheel drive tow truck? Creams has the knowledge and experience to tow any and all large trucks. Their goal is to get you back on the road and home safe in the shortest amount of time. Need an RV towed? You guessed it. Creams Heavy Duty Towing can do that too. Their Class A drivers are fully insured and certified in heavy duty towing. Don't scream. Call Creams. 707-588-1250. Creams Heavy Duty Towing. 588-1250.
Do you hate your boring desk job? Want to be outside enjoying the sun? Capital Lumber is looking for people to join their team. They're currently hiring yard assistants and forklift operators. Capital is a family-owned wholesale distributor of building materials in the beautiful city of Healdsburg. They provide benefits ranging from medical, dental, and vision to retirement plans and fun branch activities like paintball and ziplining. Apply at capital-lumber.com or call the office at 707-433-7070 and ask for HR.
The Santa Rosa Fire Department reminds residents to celebrate safely this July 4th. The possession, sale, and use of all fireworks is illegal in Santa Rosa. Warm weather and dried grass and vegetation coupled with the illegal use of fireworks could lead to a significant fire. Santa Rosa police and fire departments will be out in the community to enforce the city's fireworks ban. Don't ruin your celebration by risking a hefty fine or possible arrest. For more information, visit srcity.org/fireworks ban.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Well, that snappy little music means that you are in the KSRO kitchen with Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner, celebrating 34 years in the kitchen. John was Seafood Educator of the Year in 2014, an award given by the Monterey Seafood Bay Aquarium, and has also been on the advisory board, I think, since the beginning of the Monterey Bay Aquarium.
For Seafood Watch.
And has written a wonderful article, Sustainable Seafoods, which we'll post this on the KSRO website. So there's a lot of information to absorb and a lot of great recipes. Give us just the highlights.
And great pictures, too.
And there are some wonderful photographs by John Burgess of the Press Democrat that are just terrific. The deviled Dungeness crab. How does frozen Dungeness crab work in this? Would it work in this recipe?
Oh, yeah. It will. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's crab, Dungeness crabs specifically, is a seasonal crop. You know, we only get it for, you know, that period
November through about April or so.
Yeah, and this year it was even shorter than that to be able to get it. So the way that you can always get it is to buy it frozen. It freezes wonderfully. You know, you can get it in little one-pound containers and things like that. And there are other crabs also that you could use, crab meat that you could use, lump crab, which those who are from the East Coast and from the South are familiar with, which is blue crab, which you can get fresh and also get frozen.
And this is a very simple recipe. You can either serve it in little shells, is that the traditional way to do the deviled crabs, or in gratin dishes.
Yeah, pretty quick. Little ramekins or something like
and
that.
And the key is panko in Worcestershire.
Yeah.
Those are two indispensable parts. Yeah. Shrimp couillon with rice. Now, shrimp is another minefield of how to buy shrimp.
Yeah, so here's something to keep in mind with shrimp. Buy any shrimp that, because there are these laws which require that, they're called country of origin labeling, which require that when you go to the market that the place that it comes from is displayed. And if you just remember with shrimp, either wild caught or farm raised, just buy American. That's all you need to know. It's problematical when you buy stuff from India or Southeast Asia or something like that. It's not that there aren't some good producers there, but there are a lot of them
questionable
that aren't good producers.
So this is another easy recipe, and also Save those shrimp shells. You've taught me.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
They make a great stock.
Well, I know people. I want to buy the ones that are already peeled because it's such a pain in the neck to do it. The shrimp shells are gold. They really are. So you take those, and even if you're not going to use them right away, take them, throw them in a little baggie, throw them in your freezer, and then when it comes time to make a fish stock or shellfish stock for your soup or sauce or whatever, all you have to do with those shells is take them out, either roast them or saute them, and just a tiny bit of oil until they get brown and very fragrant. Add some good chicken stock to it and let them simmer for 10-15 minutes. Then strain them. Now you can throw the shells away and you have the most delicious stock.
And freeze as well, but in little cubes or so. If you're
and then if you want to, yeah. But I freeze it in big.
You did.
Because
quart size, gallon size. Thai style tomato soup with mussels and cellophane noodles is the next recipe. And I love what you wrote. Mussels are one of the cheapest and tastiest forms of animal protein available, and their environmental resume is impressive. Mm. They require no feed as they filter plankton and other microscopic nutrients from the water. What a perfect seafood, isn't it?
Oh, they are. And the key is all that we get in the market are usually, almost always, or they should be, come from farm sources. You can certainly go out to our coast and gather mussels, but I think I said in this article, don't do it, because they can be, who knows what kind of pollution may have been in the water. And like oysters, mussels are constantly, when they're farmed, constantly monitored.
I'm surprised that they're not more popular, because they're one of the best deals in the seafood case. And they're consistent.
Yeah,
we eat mussels a lot. They're just wonderful.
Yeah, and they are, you know, depending on where they come from, they're fatter and juicier than others. I have a particular affection for the mussels that we get, and we get them here. You can go to any fish market. Prince Edward Island.
They're terrific.
Yeah.
The next one is the Red Snapper Veracruz style. Don't knock yourself out looking for a label that says Red Snapper.
Well, yeah, because the snapper, there's a fish that is called, which is what's sold on our coast, on our west coast, called Pacific Snapper. Mm-hmm. Well, it's rock cod. But because of, well, it was really Paul Prudhomme who got people going on blackened red snapper, which is an entirely different fish, which comes from the Gulf of Mexico. We don't have true red snapper here. So we substitute the rock cod, which works perfectly fine. And rock cod are one of those things that always have been pretty cheap, you know, because you could catch them like crazy. For any of you who've gone out fishing out in the ocean, you know, if you hit a school of rock cod, you just are pulling them in every, you know, 1 a minute or something like that. Until we discovered that rock cod, which are not Pacific snapper, there is no such thing, the rock cod take along many of them. They come in all colors of the rainbow, and some of them take as long as 100 years to grow to maturity. So you want to be careful about not taking too many. And fishermen, they've begun to recognize that. So they've gotten more expensive, but they're still a good value.
So any rockfish will work the store.
Yeah.
Oysters with jalapeno salsa, another wonderful one. And I wanted to skip over to the scallop poke, because buying scallops is another one of those, what do I look for?
Well, again, most of the scallops, not all, but most of the scallops we buy in the market have been farm-raised. They do gather some in the wild, but what's happened is the way that they were gathering them, they were destroying a lot of the seabed and all of that. So it was just to have a more reliable source, they figured out how to grow them on farms, and that way we can have them all year round.
Okay, and look for ones that don't contain the word I
tri-polyphosphate,
never can read. Tri-polyphosphate.
Yeah.
Which pumps them up with a salt brine. Is that what it is?
It's basically kind of a brine that pumps them up, makes them very white. So if you go into the market and you're looking down and you sort of see these white scallops, probably don't buy them because they've probably been thrown into that brine because it also bleaches them. Real scallops, when you see them that are fresh and delicious, they're sometimes pinkish, brownish, all of
those.
That kind of stuff. Those are the ones you want to get.
Okay. And then clam fritters? Well, you can't go wrong with clam fritters.
No.
This packet will be up later this afternoon if you'd like to access some of these great recipes and read about how we can make better, intelligent choices when purchasing seafoods. Thanks for writing this.
Sure.
From seafood, we're going to go out to the grill with Jamie Proviance. That's coming up next as we get ready for July 4th. It's the Good Food Hour on KSRO.
The switch to crystal clear KSRO FM 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
For years, scientists have sought to solve the world's greatest mysteries. What is the nature of time? Are there extra dimensions of space? Does life exist beyond Earth? And finally, what do you do with the filter after you change the oil in your car? Don't throw that filter in the trash. Drain it, then seal it in a leak-proof bag. Proceed to the nearest certified collection center. And think about this. Recycled oil filters in California produce enough steel to build 3 sports stadiums every year. So, in summary, time is a human construct, perhaps unknowable. Still, there's always time to do the right thing. There may be many dimensions of space, but there is no extra space for used oil filters. If life does exist beyond Earth, it probably already knows about the wisdom of recycling. And finally, there is no mystery.
To find the nearest Sonoma County Collection Center, go to ZeroWasteSonoma.gov. ZeroWasteSonoma.gov. Funded by Cal Recycle.
Real estate has been designated an essential business. The updated safety precautions in Sonoma County ensure the safety of both buyers and sellers.
We're finding new ways to navigate. It's not back to normal, but we're offering creative strategies, including live face-to-face virtual tours and virtual open houses. We can now show occupied properties and have implemented all the health and safety requirements put forth by the County of Sonoma. Just in time for spring, interest rates are still historically low, so it's a great time to buy. And if you want to sell, there's a pent-up demand for homes. Home values are holding steady. Give me a call and I'll give you some honest advice, explain the current market, and help you find a good strategy, whether you decide to hire me as your realtor or not.
Allison Norman is a realtor with Keller Williams Realty and host of Mike Kelly's Real Estate Hour, Sundays at 9 a.m. on KSRO. To discuss your specific real estate needs or to make a no-obligation appointment, call or text 707-799-3617. DRE license number 01720334.
Mercedes-Benz of Santa Rosa is giving you the chance to express your freedom on the road with a brand new 2019 Mercedes-Benz. Mercedes-Benz of Santa Rosa is open and following all guidelines for your safety. To offer you some relief, we enhanced all the new 2019s left in stock to make them the perfect buy for you. Plus, all remaining 2019s get 2 years of free maintenance. Wow! Available now, a new 2019 Mercedes-Benz A220 sedan. Lease for $229 per month for 36 months on approved credit. Yours with $199 down or trade equity. $795 acquisition fee plus first month payment. On approved above average credit through Mercedes-Benz Financial Services. VIN number 012013. See Mercedes-Benz of Santa Rosa for complete details or call 1-800-4-MERCEDES. Find out which new 2019 Mercedes-Benz fits your style. Hurry, sale ends June 30th. Mercedes-Benz of Santa Rosa on the Corbiato Row or mbofsantarosa.com.
With Sonoma County's most accurate, most dependable forecast, here's Daniel Trucios on the KSRO Weather Watch.
I'm Jeff Woodworth, filling in for Daniel Trucios. Partly cloudy skies and coastal wind gusts up to 25 miles per hour will give us daytime highs in the mid-70s, low 60s along the coast. Later tonight, we can look to clear skies with a few passing clouds and light and varying coastal winds to leave us with overnight lows in the low 50s. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5 KSRO.
In the KSRO kitchen, I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash. And John, I'm going to give you a test. I'm giving a quiz.
Oh, no.
I'll give you a quiz. I'm going to see if you read Weber's Ultimate Grilling, a step-by-step guide to barbecue genius. Because if you had, you'd be able to tell me what was President Dwight Eisenhower's favorite way to grill a steak.
I think it was thrown it just straight on the coals.
Ding, 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 ding. You win.
Yeah.
And I learned that from reading Chef Jamie Proviance's book. We had the pleasure of having Jamie in the KSRO kitchen last year around the same time for the release of the book. And when we thought about, oh, July 4th is coming up, who could we have on to prepare our listeners? Jamie's name popped up. Hi, Jamie. Welcome back.
Hi, Steve. Hi, John.
How are you doing?
Good to be with you again.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good. You're sheltering in place?
I've got no other choice.
Well, yeah. Have you been grilling? Have you been barbecuing at all?
Of course. I've been cooking more in general. I mean, I've got a family here, and, you know, they need to eat every day, it seems. you know, I go to what I do best, so that typically takes me outside, which is great. And I find that I'm growing things that, well, I grill the old favorites, but I you know, I'm looking for new things to grill as well. And that's, I guess, been a silver lining in all of this, is that I'm kind of expanding my repertoire.
So what's the latest new thing that you've done that's kind of out there?
Oh, well, you know, I'm doing a lot of sort of grill roasting of root vegetables and such, things like, you know, beets and onions and potatoes. I'm doing interesting things with cauliflower and broccoli. You know, not the kind of thing where you just slap it over really high heat like a steak or a chicken breast, but more where you coat it with spices or a tandoori crust, and then you let it slow roast, maybe with some smoke, and then serve it with, you know, some nice grains or something. You know, my wife is a vegan, so I always have to have something really delicious and vegan for her. And that's a relatively new thing. So that's also pushing me into, you know, uncharted territory, which is good. I think we all need to grow as cooks. And
yeah.
I think I have in the last few months.
You actually included that tandoori cauliflower with herb chutney in the Ultimate Grilling Book.
Yeah, I go back to that again and again. I just love it. It's a beautiful looking dish. People can't see the book now, but, you know, it's, imagine cutting into a cake and you've kind of got this golden layer on the outside, like the icing, and then this soft, wonderful, luscious white center. And it's really gratifying. It has a lot of flavor. Most people think of cauliflower being pretty bland, but this has got a lot of flavor.
You know, in the beginning of the book, just to start things off, and I think it's worth reviewing those quickly, if you wouldn't mind, you talk about the four T's. What are those?
Yeah, that's sort of my shorthand for, you know, what your priorities should be in any given recipe. I think sometimes people just sort of get out there and wing it, and they get a little lost in the process. Maybe they've had a little wine, or they're playing a game, or they're sucked into some political conversation, you know, and the food sometimes suffers. And I say, well, here are the most important things. You know your time, your temperature, your techniques, and your tools. So, you know how long that food is going to be on the grill, the timing. Know the right temperature. Not everything should be done over high or medium or low. Everything has its own sort of preferred zone. Know what technique you're using. You know, is it straight up on the grill, direct over the fire? Is it indirect? Is it a combination of the two? Are you smoking? And then, you know, just get yourself ready with the right tools. Sometimes that can make a huge difference, whether you've got a vegetable basket that prevents things from falling through the grate, or, you know, a smoker box to give you the smoke you want. If you've got those things, those four things dialed in, I think your chances are much better of having a great meal.
So do you have a favorite grill that you use, gas versus charwood or charcoal, or do you use them both?
I use them both. To be honest, I've been using my gas grill more, I think because I've been grilling more, and, you know, charcoal takes a little bit more time to get going. But I use them both. They sit out there kind of side by side. I now have a pellet grill as well, which I've just started to play with. And then I've got a couple of smokers, you know, a water smoker, and another sort of homemade option. But anyway, it just sort of depends on how much time I have in the day and what sort of flavor I want to impart. You know, sometimes I really want to have that charcoal flavor, and so the choice is obvious. But if I want just sort of a neutral flavor with a nice caramelization on some fish or some vegetables, then maybe gas is the best way to go. Mm-hmm.
Well, you also talk about adding, even if you're using a gas grill, that you can add that smoky flavor there, and you talk about several techniques for doing that, but one of those is just the use of a little smoker box.
That's right. You can buy a steel smoker box to set either right up on top of the cooking grate, or sometimes it's better to put it down right over the burners, or you can actually make your own. You can take just some tin foil, put some soaked chips in there that you've drained them off, so they're just damp in the foil, and you make a little packet and poke some holes in it and set that over the gas burners, and you will get effectively the same smoke that you would get out of a smoker box. It doesn't last as long. You can't replenish that. So it's good for like quick cooks. So if you say, oh, I just want to put a little smoke on this grilled salmon, it's perfect because the smoke is there for about, maybe 8-10 minutes, and then the salmon comes off and it's delicious.
If you just had one wood chunk or wood chip to use, what would you suggest?
My personal preference is hickory. I don't know. It's just what I kind of grew up with as a bacon loving boy, and so that is just kind of it is the flavor profile of smoked meat. Mm-hmm. And so I go to that more often than anything else. But I also like playing with apple and cherry. And when I get into long smokes, I'm doing ribs or brisket or pork shoulder or something like that, I like to play, like do a few of them. Maybe start with one and then go to another, or put two in together. They're kind of like playing with spices, right? Like a little paprika, a little chili powder. You could do a little cherry wood, a little apple wood, a little mesquite. They all have different strengths and intensities. They have different color effects on the meat. So you can go down a rabbit hole here and get real, and some people do, they get really, intricate in their use of wood and smoke, and it's fun. But if you want to keep it simple, hickory is always good.
Good. So there are so many really, again, interesting techniques and recipes in the book. Would you talk about the reverse seared? This was one that you did with ribeye steaks, but I assume you could do it with any steak, any cut of beef that way. But what is reverse searing?
Yeah, it's a great technique that is gaining popularity on the barbecue. I think, actually, it sort of comes out of the sous vide world where, in a kitchen, you would cook something very gently in a sous vide water bath and then take it out of that and then sort of blast it at the very end. And the advantage of that is you get perfectly even cooked meat. And how sometimes if you just blast a steak over direct heat for the full time, you overcook the top and the bottom of the steak a little bit. You get a great crust and a wonderful char, but there's this sort of ring of overcooked meat. So the reverse sear minimizes that effect. And it's just what it sounds like. You were reversing the process, the traditional process. So the traditional process is you sear it first, and then maybe you sort of slow roast it at the end. So let's reverse that. We'll start by setting the steaks over very low indirect heat, like 300 degrees, and you're just kind of baking them slowly. You let them sit there until they get up to an internal temperature. I shoot usually for about 100, so it's still very, very rare, but it's cooked. It's on its way. And then you take the steaks off. You bring up the fire, whether it's turning up the gas burners or adding a lot more charcoal, and get that thing raging hot. And then you sear it for just a minute, about a minute on each side, to get a little bit of crust and char. And it works great, again, because you're not overcooking the top and the bottom. It's kind of nice for a sort of a dinner party situation, not that we have that opportunity so much these days, but you can basically get a lot of the cooking done ahead of time and then just sear at the end for people. And it's cool, too. Let's face it, particularly with a bunch of guys sitting around talking about techniques, it's just fun to say, hey, let me show you how to reverse sear the steak.
It sounds great.
It works.
I want to remind listeners to stick around the next few minutes. We're going to give away an autographed copy of Jamie Provine's latest book, Weber's Ultimate Grilling, a step-by-step guide to barbecue genius. 125 recipes, 200 techniques, and 750 color photos. John was mentioning before we had you on, Jamie, that he felt this was one of the best books, especially for an introduction to grilling and barbecuing, he's ever seen, because of all the photographs.
Wow. You were so complete in there. Yes, the seasoned grill person could learn a lot from the book. But for somebody who's never done it before, you did such a great job of here are the steps, you know, and they, you know, maybe everybody thinks they know what they are, but they don't always.
Most people will be certainly throwing meat on the grill or chicken on the grill, and burgers might be the most popular for July 4th cookout. I love what you wrote, Jamie, as far as burgers. You wrote, quote, avoid premature fiddling. We futz around too much with our burgers?
We do. I'm guilty of it. I try to do less and less of it because I know better now. But there is something instinctual. I think, you know, once you put the meat on the fire, you want to get engaged, right? You want to start, you know, taking control. But the problem is if you go in too early, you create more problems than, you know, than flavors develop. Let's put it that way. You know, because meat sticks to the grill originally, right? You put it down for the first couple of minutes, it's going to be stuck on there. If you try to lift that burger off of the grate when it's still partially stuck, you're going to tear it. And you're going to leave actually the best part, those little charred bits of brown meat on the grate. And it gets worse from there on in. So put it down, close the lid, let it go for at least 3 minutes. And you'll find that they come off cleanly with better color, better flavor, and better taste all around.
So talk about dimpling. What is that with a burger? Why do you do that?
You know, that's a little technique that helps to create a flatter, more even burger. There is a tendency sometimes for burgers to shrink as they cook and turn into more of a meatball than a patty, right? And then it's harder to stack things on top, you know, in the burger, and it's not so great. So what you do is ahead of time, while the patties are raw, you use maybe a spoon or your thumb if you want, and you create a little well in the center of the patty. And then when a meat goes onto the grill and it starts to want to shrink from the outside in, that center section just comes up to flat as opposed to being a domed meatball effect. So you get a flatter burger.
If someone asked me if we played How Well Do You Know Your Guest Chef, and they said, Steve, what do you think Jamie Provine's his favorite sauce is in the whole world, one he couldn't live without, I might answer chimichurri.
Yeah. Well, any of those kind of herby sauces, I just love. You know, pesto-ish kind of things. But chimichurri is just that classic South American thing. It seems to go with everything. You know, chicken or fish or steak or lamb. I just love it. Lots of garlic and herbs and oil. Can't go wrong.
Wonderful. And we've talked about this on the show for a few years, but a lot of people have never tried it. It's a little intimidating. Spatchcocked chicken. Would that help people's track record of improving their chicken experience on the grill?
I think so. You know, cooking a whole chicken is not that easy when it's just sitting in its quote-unquote natural state. You typically overcook something and undercook something else. So spatchcocking, it literally just means butterflying, or, you know, you take out that backbone and you lay the whole chicken flat, and now you've got a much more even piece of meat to work with. You also get now more surface area to put right down on the hot grate. And I think that's key. That's one of the reasons that people really love grilled food, is it has that caramelized, charred quality on the surface. And so now you got more of that chicken exposed to the hot grate. And if you do it, the safest way to do it is probably just completely over indirect heat. But I like to live dangerously a little bit, and I put it right down over direct heat. You got to watch it. I don't want to fool anyone into thinking it's super, super easy, but it's really worth it. And the chicken cooks faster and more evenly, and typically is a lot juicier.
And that's a great tip. We're going to close up with dessert, I just want to mention, people, that you have a wonderful crostata recipe in here. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, people have great illusions about making desserts and they fall flat. This is pretty much foolproof, this summer berry crostata. And you cook it right on a pizza stone. Wouldn't you say it's pretty close to foolproof?
It is. You know, and if you're scared of making a dough, I'd say just go out and buy your own dough. It's pretty easy. I do show you exactly, you know, what the texture of the dough should look like and how to roll it out and all that. But, you know, essentially all you're doing is taking that dough, you're filling it with berries, which are now coming into, you know, their glory, mixed with a little bit of sugar and some spice. And then you just, you put it on a hot pizza stone. And it's basically you're baking it, but you're doing it outside, which makes it sort of ups the cool factor and the wow factor when it, you know, when you pull this thing off of the grill, like, whoa, you did that thing on your grill?
Yep.
That's so awesome. So, I would encourage people to do it. It looks great for relatively little effort.
Jamie, your favorite number today between 1 and 12, please.
Number 4.
Caller number 4 at 636-1350 will win this. Weber's Ultimate Grilling, a step-by-step guide to barbecue genius, written by Chef Jamie Provides. He's celebrating over 20 years as Weber's chief grill educator and master of the hearth. Thank you, Jamie. It was wonderful talking with you. Hopefully, in the not-too-distant future, we'll have a pleasure of sitting down with you in the KSRO kitchen again.
Hey, that would be great. But meanwhile, have a great 4th. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Both
thanks,
of you.
Jamie.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chef John Ash. We will see you in the kitchen next week.
Yes, you will.
And look for John's recipes on sustainable seafood later this afternoon. Thanks for listening. Coming up next, At the Table with Clark Wolf.
Sonoma County's local news, weather, and traffic station, FM News Talk, KSRO, 103.5, 94.5.
Come to the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, voted Best Farmers Market. You'll find Garden Starts, the best produce of the season from Singing Frogs, The Patch, Armstrong Valley, Ponce Farms, and Hector's Honey. The Beet Generation has a large selection of fresh-made pasta. Savor Farm fresh eggs, jams, and jellies, fresh mushrooms, and fresh fruit. Apricots, peaches, nectarines, strawberries, and cherries. Discover quality beef, pork, lamb, and duck, Anna's fresh seafood, and Franco's freshly made sausages. The best choices of food vendors, the Green Grocer's Farm Fresh Menu, Eli's Kitchen has returned to provide fabulous homemade Mexican food. Santa Rosa's Original Certified Farmers Market at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts is open year-round, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thank you, Sonoma County, for voting them number one, the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Austin here for More Home Services. One of the most common questions we get is, do I really need to spend $88 to tune up my air conditioner every single year? You know what? It's actually the best $88 you'll spend all year. For starters, you'll more than earn back your money in energy savings because your AC will run 10 to 20% more efficiently. Second, a tuned-up AC will break down less often because we'll catch the small problems before they become big, expensive problems. And third, your system is going to last longer, so you won't need to spend the money to replace it sooner than you have to. I can tell you from sad experience, missing a tune-up for even 1 year takes a real toll on your air conditioner. If you miss it for 2 years, well, you're just asking for trouble. So call More Home Services right now to schedule your precision tune-up and professional cleaning. I promise you, it will be the best $88 you spend.